You're listening to the Vacation Rental Managers Podcast with Sarah and T.
Sarah stands for me, Sarah Bradford, a 15-year vacation rental company owner in Colorado who sold the company for big bucks last year.
And T stands for me, Tim Cafferty, who's still moving and shaking with two companies, Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue, in North Carolina and Virginia, respectively.
Between us, we have managed over 700 properties, making lasting memories for over 100,000 guests and produced over 150 podcast episodes and counting, sharing all of our secrets to growing a profitable, long-lasting vacation rental company.
We like to call those secrets pullover moments, and it wouldn't be possible without support from our pullover partners, ICND, Key Data, and Sojo.
We're back and better than ever. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Tim. How are things going today, Sarah?
I just got back from Hawaii and I stayed in the most amazing vacation rental, which maybe we'll get into in the answers to our questions submitted today. So I'm feeling great, feeling tan, relaxed, but man, that's a rough flight back.
Paradise has its penalties you have to pay as well, right? To get there. So,
all right, we have so many questions to answer today. The listeners submitted gobs, and we have our challenge in front of us, Tim. So I wanted to start off the episode with asking you a question, and I haven't even prepared you, but this is a very important question. This is probably the most important question of the day.
Oh, Lord.
What do you think of TTPD so far?
I'm going to need a little more information to give you an appropriate answer.
The Tortured Poets Department, Taylor's new album.
Oh, God.
No, the anthology, all of it. Fun.
I enjoy Taylor Swift's music. I have to admit, I was not up at 2 a.m. for the drop on that. And so I'm going to have to take your word for how great it is so far.
All right, we'll report back. But the best thing about being in Hawaii is it came out for us at 8 o'clock. So we just got to listen all night. And my husband even is a Swiftie, a new Swiftie. But anyway, I can't stop listening. So now my question's answered. Let's get to the listener questions.
Oh, boy. Okay. So we put it out there on social media and also reached out to some of our friends. Do you have a question for us? And let's just get to it. First one up is Megan Ketterman.
Hi, this is Megan Ketterman with Oconee Hospitality. We are located in the beautiful upstate of South Carolina on Lake Kiawee and near Clemson. My question for Sarah and T today is, what do you recommend property managers supply when stocking a home ready for guests? I have been supplying pretty much everything that a guest would need as far as soap, shampoos, toilet paper, paper towels, coffees, creamers, teas, trash bags, you name it, we provide it. And if a guest calls and says, hey, can we get more? We gladly take them more. But as you can imagine, since we do not pass this along to the homeowner, it does eat into the bottom line. And I'm just curious if we're providing too much or, you know, what you guys would recommend.
Well, that is a great question. And since you are the most recent traveler on this podcast, you may be appropriate to answer this question first, Sarah.
Yes. Megan sent that question in not even knowing we were doing this episode. She just had the question. She's a fan of the podcast. So thanks, Megan. So many things to say here, but I'm going to talk about the top three. One, this really depends a little bit on your commission and fees. Meaning, if you have a super low commission and you're not getting extra money on fees, it is hard to provide what was provided to me at this Maui vacation rental, which I'll get into. I would ask everybody to consider increasing your fees to pay for this, though, because the standardization in the market is happening, even though it's not officially being directed by anyone. And more, of course, shampoo and conditioner, that kind of thing is expected, toilet paper, et cetera. I think there's very few companies out there now that make you bring your sheets and all that craziness that we never, well, you understand it, Tim, but we didn't out west. I also think you have to think about drive or fly market. If you have a primarily drive market, people are probably bringing more supplies like shampoo and conditioner, but they're not going to bring paper towels. So I just think you have to figure out how to have this base supply list that you are giving. I'm a big fan of putting it all in there and more than they would ever want. Put a whole box of trash bags. Put as much coffee as they would ever use in a week. Don't make them go out 2 days left in their vacation and have to buy plastic bags or have to buy paper towels. Now, in Maui, I was overwhelmed by what they supplied. It made me actually think, ooh, I must have paid too much for this vacation rental, because they had so much stuff. Like, they had to-go coffee cups, Tim. They had to-go containers for food. They had picnic equipment. They had coffee in giant, like, beautiful coffee from Kona Coffee, two different kinds, in plastic containers as well, plus the packaging. And then we did get low on coffee the fourth or fifth, sixth day. I called and they brought two more brand new coffee bags. Like, I saw it in the grocery store and I think they were $15 each, something wild like that. So it really depends on the level of service you're offering, driver, fly market. But I do think we can't make excuses on this anymore. And Tim, as you know, I believe this makes guests come back to you again and again. So you're investing in your return guest rate.
Okay. Is that soapbox too high for you this morning? Were you able to step down without hurting yourself? Okay.
I know.
Just want to make sure you're good there, because I think the thing that you said that resonates most with me is that it is very much dependent on if you're a fly or drive market. And I would add to that, my experience here over the last year and a half or so also depends on whether it's a direct booking or through a third-party agency. My experience over the last year is people who book through Vrbo, for instance, have higher expectations for what's there. So many of us have a starter supply, but it's not an unlimited supply. And we've taken some blowback about that. What do you mean I can't have unlimited toilet paper? What do you mean I have to go buy coffee? So the expectations of the guests are there. I will go with you on that. But it is also very much commission dependent.
And the final thing there, Tim, is, you know, I'm a big fan of putting an amenities photo on every listing. So to set that expectation before they even book, put a picture of what you provide. So then they'll see that you have two dishwashing pods and they'll know, oh, okay. Whereas we show the whole brand new box because we provide it all. And if you had made me buy toilet paper in Maui where we were staying, I would have been like, I mean, unless I had paid bare bones, but for what we paid to give me the task of going to find toilet paper would have been obnoxious. But Tim, you have guests driving down from Maryland, Pennsylvania. They probably pack all that up.
Yeah. The tradition in this market is that's not provided. I told the story about a vacation rental that I had this past Christmas where I overloaded my house, couldn't accommodate everybody. And we checked in and literally there's one roll of toilet paper on the counter, unwrapped, hanging off the edge for a four bathroom house. So just take that for what it's worth. Somewhere in the middle there is probably where you need to be.
Amen. Hope that helped, Megan. Let's go on to the next question. Susan Blizzard.
He's here.
Hi, this is Susan Blizzard from Blizzard Consulting. And Tim and Sarah, you said, bring it on. So here goes. Having worked with many vacation rental management companies on their websites and digital marketing over the years, I've had several clients whose homeowners said they need to have their own website for their own property, or an HOA group wants to have it for their condo or association. They've either insisted on it or the property manager has even offered that as a way to get more people to join their rental program. And this causes a lot of problems for marketers. Just having the website out there, it's hard to get enough traffic to the main website for the property manager's company. And also the homeowners and HOAs are never really very happy because they have an expectation that this website's going to pop up in Google for them magically, and it often does not. So my question is, Do you think it's easier for the homeowner or HOA to switch to another rental company once they get a microsite, get a website of their own? I guess I kind of already voiced my opinion on that. So that's my question.
Okay, Susan, as much as that was a question, I think we also got an answer. Let me start there, because I'm pretty sure you have an opinion on this, Susan Blizzard, and I think I share it with you. I would first of all say, what you do for one, be prepared to do for all. As a father of eight and now grandfather of five, when I give one grandchild a donut, I better have one for the other one, right? Or else Papa T's in trouble. And so I think it's dumb, first of all. And I think you answered the question there at the end, Susan, about the sites itself. Who owns the site? If I create it, I'm going to register the domain and I'm going to own the site as the, well as the photography and everything like that. So if it goes somewhere else, you ain't taking the site with you. Sarah, you're with me on this?
Yes. Dumb was also the word that came to my mind about these sites. I've always thought that. I have 2 points. One, I don't think you need to make up technology solutions like this to make it hard for owners to switch. I heard that that's why some people do this. If you're trying to hold your owners hostage, you're doing something wrong. Make it that they can't switch because they love you. They can't live without you. Not because you have some 2007 technology of a website for Deer Castle, you know, or whatever it's called, the beach house. No. Also, this screams rookie in the industry. Be the expert. Say what you think and you know about an idea like this. If they go to someone else because they're offering a website like this, you probably didn't want that owner anyway. I'm telling you. You need to be the expert, you guys. Stick to your guns and explain very clearly why this makes no sense.
On to the next question.
Hey, Sarah and T. This is Dawn Yaskolsky with the PMS Pros. This past week at VRMA, we had a pretty lively discussion surrounding some of the terminology that is used to describe our industry. So I thought I would call in and ask you for your vote. So are you team vacation rental or team short-term rental? And then are you team properties or team listings? I'm a vacation rental and properties girl, but that's just because I'm old. I'd love to hear what you think and what everybody else thinks. Thanks. Bye.
All right. You know I have an opinion on this one, Tim. Thank you, Don, for such a nice controversial question. I rarely say short-term rental, but I'm not bothered by it like I used to be. I say vacation rental. As long as you don't say Airbnb, I'm happy. As far as properties, as long as you don't say units, I'm also happy. So if you say units on Airbnb, I am so cringing over here. That's my take. Tim?
Okay, I'm team vacation rental and team properties, Dawn. And by the way, you're not old. The one thing that does bother me is referring to these properties as homes. I do understand what you're trying to connotate because you want to care for the home. But I think it was Stephen Craig, a name out of the past, who told me, first of all, don't allow your property owners to call them homes. The moment they accepted a dollar for the rental of the property, it became a commercial domicile for profit. They opened a business and they're running a business. It's not your home.
I like that. I've heard several people say, we want this to feel like a homeowner's home. They are a homeowner. That's the problem right there. We're not calling them a property owner. We're calling them a homeowner. So I think it's hard to break that, but just please don't call it units.
Okay, onward.
Hi, this is Tara Crosby, owner of Grand Adventure Company in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Sarah and Tim, my question for you is, if you could go back to year 4 or 5 after starting your business, knowing what you know now, what piece of advice would you give your former selves?
So many things I learned from 4 or 5 to where am I? 19 now? There's so many. I think Sarah just hit it a moment ago. Don't make rookie mistakes. Think through what you're doing. I remember guaranteeing income for a property because I wanted it so badly. 3 years, 4 years in, I can do that. And then I didn't. And then I had to write a check. Never again. And the other thing I would say is nurturing your education. Let's face it, we're all fairly headstrong people that run these vacation rentals. We know what we're doing. This is our way we do it. Keep yourself open to new ideas or else you will perish.
My answer is, if you are a new listener to this podcast, go back and listen to the 173 episodes we've recorded in the past 7+ years, and you will get everything we want to tell you about the advice we wish we had had 4 years in. But if I must pick a few things, well, I'm supposed to pick one, but of course I'm picking two. It would be what Tim finally told me to do, which was to get an assistant. Get an assistant, get an assistant. Oh, did I say get an assistant? There's different ways you can have an assistant. Mine did a lot of personal things for me and freed me up and really helped my stress level. The second one would be, I wasn't a real estate broker like Tim is and like many on the East Coast are. And so we just referred clients, our owners, our guests, randoms that would call us. We just referred them to our real estate friends. And yes, those real estate friends definitely referred people back to us. And that worked okay. But that could have still exactly happened how it had. But if we had had our real estate license, we would have gotten, at least in Colorado, 25% of the commission paid on all sales that we referred. And I'd have a nice little extra pot of money right now if I had done that. And real estate agents love referrals, so it's not even seen as a negative. So we would have gotten our real estate license way before we did.
Interesting you mentioned that, because our next caller has a question.
Hey, Sarah and team. Thank you for having us. This is Neil Maimon from the Maimon Group over here in LA. My question to the broadcast is, how many property managers out there are using real estate agents to book their home, and how many of them working with real estate agents to get more homes for their inventory? Love to hear your thoughts. Love to hear that topic. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you just covered that. Real estate sales is an integral part of my organization. I have 7 agents. We happen to rank in the top 10 real estate offices on the Outer Banks amongst probably 250 offices and 900 agents that work the area. It is a constant source of new business for us. And P.S., as you just mentioned in the previous question, Sarah, when those property owners decide that they've aged out, so to speak, and they want to sell their property, who are they going to call? Ghostbusters. I mean, calling me, right, at first to get a crack at it. And so we've been able to help control the sale as well. Not that we exercise undue influence, but if you're involved in the process, certainly the in-house agent is going to do a good job of promoting the company so you keep the property. Yes, real estate sales referrals, top source of business.
Yeah, you don't get that call. We sold our home. We forgot to tell you. Before I answer Nir's question, which I love this question, Tim, lately with some of my clients I've been working with on my little consulting side biz, they're realtors and they're also vacation rental managers. And it creates a bit of tension. And I just want to know how you would answer this. They have an urge to take on many more low producing properties than I ever would have, because they want to be able to sell that someday. They don't want to hurt the relationship they have with the buying and selling process by telling these people that they can't rent their home. What do you think about that? Do you have that?
We've had to say no quite a bit. Yes. And that's why I have someone in that position to be able to tell them what our standards are. And while this is not a good fit for us, it doesn't mean your property is ugly. There is a place for it. It's just not in our program. So yeah, you have to have those difficult conversations. And there's also the other part of the difficult conversation, and that's the agent has a great listing that's maybe listed with another property, and we're not going to get a shot at it because the other company's killing it, right? So you get that part of it as well. Just remember those agents are independent contractors. while they do wear your logo and take space in your office, the fact is their interest is in that sale.
Right. So you really are giving up some potential commission in the future when you say no, and you have to just accept that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you get the commission on the sale at least. So you've got that going for you.
Right. But in 5 years, are they going to call you back?
If the agent does a good job, should be top of the mind, whether they're in the program or not. I would say, although my agents do have listings that are in my rental program, the vast majority of sales take place with properties that are not in my rental program.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay. Thank you. Nir, my answer to you is if you go and listen to episode 47, I know you're a newer listener and I appreciate that you've joined on the Sarah and T bandwagon. Thank you for listening and submitting this. Episode 47, Creating an Effective Partnership with Realtors. You'll hear everything I think about that, everything from Tim's perspective. You know, I think it's absolutely essential to work with real estate agents, not so much to book your home. I think in bigger cities like you're in Hollywood, you might be using Zillow or they're using Zillow to book homes. In resort markets, we don't ever use Zillow. But to get new properties, heck yeah, on working with realtors. That was our number one source of new homes.
And then just to put that bow around it, if you are a company that does not have a real estate sales presence, you may be able to work that to an advantage by working with those agents in the market who don't have an affiliation with a property management company, and they know that you're going to be loyal to them. So in other words, if an agent refers a property to me on the rental end that doesn't work in my company, they might have fear that my real estate agents will then come in and horn in on their customer. So you will have that veil that you can use as an advantage. I'll never take your customer. Just keep them referring here on the rentals and I'll keep referring you on the sale.
Good stuff. Okay, let's move on to Linnell.
Hi, this is Linnell Gordon, host of the Vacation Rental Show, How We Grow. And I have a tough question for you. What are the best practices and things you must do as a property manager to be successful at putting your properties out on third-party booking sites?
So glad you asked, Linnell. Love me some Linnell. She's been a leader in this industry for a while now. I won't say a long time. She's a young person as well. But I would direct you to episode 153, Your Vrbo Listing Blows. We covered that pretty well about what you need to do and how to make sure your properties are popping when people are looking for them.
Yeah, that was the most professional title we ever came up with for an episode. I could go on and on, so just listen to that episode. But basically, I think the headline is still really important. Stop making boring headlines. Put the property name in the headline if it's a fun name. The lead photo is so crucial. I was just looking at Twilight exterior photos this morning. Do you know what those are? That's when you take a photo with all the lights on around 6 o'clock, that sunset hour. Man, do those get the clicks? Create your description with bullets. Make it easy to read. Remember, people don't read long paragraphs anymore. The biggest thing, Linnell, which is the hardest thing, is you have to start getting bookings on those listings. And that's really what moves you up the ladder.
I'd add two more things as well, dealing with third-party sites more and more the last few years. One is to make sure your policies are very clear on the third-party site. It's already a little bit of a pig in a poke, so to speak, when the person books. They're not really sure this is going to be what we think it is, but if your policies aren't correct, ooh, that could be bad. And then once you do start getting bookings, you start to get reviews. Make sure you respond to the reviews. Thank them for that 5-star review. Apologize for the 2-star experience. That'll get you a lot of traction.
One last thing, make it a policy to never, ever cancel an OTA booking. Because if you do an PM initiated cancellation, you push your listing way down the list. Who's our next caller?
Hey, Sarah and Tim. This is Al Ferlone, Sarah's old general manager from Winter Park Lodging Company and Steamboat Lodging Company, and I'm calling with two questions. First is for Sarah. I'm wondering if, now that you're 3 years on from the sale of the companies, do you miss working with me, or do you really, really miss working with me? I'm hoping it's the latter. Second question is for ICND, and it's about primary search filters on a website. Seems like VRBO and Airbnb and others seem to always use the number of travelers as the primary search filter, whereas the kind of split between using number of bedrooms or number of travelers for individual vacation rental manager websites. I'm wondering if your clients seem to lean one way or the other, and if you feel like there's a value in using one versus the other. Thanks.
Okay, so I can help you answer the first question, Sarah. When this recording came across, you texted me and said, "Who is this guy?"
I was going to say, because he incorrectly said I've been out of the business for 3 years. It's only been 2 years, Al. He must miss me so much. That's what I'm getting from it. But yeah, I guess we need Vanessa from IC&D to answer that question, Tim.
Great question, Al. That first question I'll defer back to Sarah. And for the second, I gathered some data with my colleague, Chris Johnson. Looking at the search data we track in analytics, we see that visitors clicking on the dates the most, then amenities like hot tubs or pools, then views like oceanfront, mountain view, and then number of bedrooms, then number of guests. So our data doesn't really suggest number of guests over number of bedrooms, does it? What you really want to concentrate on is giving them the most number of results on the search results page. Of course, we want to give them the option to filter, but if they get zero results, we want to give them a clear, easy way to expand that search and get more results, like going back to just the dates, specific amenities, with just one click of the button. And what we see with this strategy is a 20% increase in bookings and 30% in revenue. So hopefully that helps answer Al's question. Back to you, Sarah and T.
Okay, as always, IC&D is a podcast partner, crushes it. Thank you, Queen V. Appreciate you helping out on Al's question there and being a proud partner of the Vacation Rental Podcast with Sarah and T. So next up, of an old friend. I shouldn't say old friends. They are longtime friends of the show. And this one's at the top of the list.
Hello, Sarah and Tim, my brilliant, gorgeous friends. This is Amber Erickson Hurdle with Employer Brand Central and, of course, amberhurdle.com. And you know I'm coming at you with a people question. Both of you have built incredibly successful businesses, profitable, high guest satisfaction, and you've done it because you both know how to create and nurture high-performing teams. So my question for each of you is, what people practice? Just one. You can only choose one each. If you could only choose one people practice, people process, some kind of strategy or tactic in that pre-peak season and peak season, what would you choose to ensure both guest satisfaction and employee satisfaction? Let us know, because inquiring minds want to know.
Only one. Happy employees make happy guests. Do whatever you can to make sure your staff is happy. Shep Hyken did a great job explaining that to us on episode 169. If you want to read a book, Cult of the Customer is one of his. Got some great ideas in there. But if it's one, it's making sure your staff is in great shape.
We didn't even plan this, Tim, and you just teed it off to me. Make sure your staff is in great shape, quote unquote. If I had to pick one thing, it's going to surprise everybody because it's a little bit in their personal biz, but employees need to exercise. I don't care what person you are on the earth. You need to move your body and get outside and free your mind. This is an intense business, whether you're at properties doing maintenance, cleaning properties, which is exhausting, or you're on the phones dealing with problems, marketing, whatever it may be, talking to homeowners, make sure your employees have a way to blow off steam besides drugs and alcohol. So in our market, we buy their ski pass. We bought, if they didn't want to ski, we bought their rec center workout pass. Even one employee, we paid for their stable for their horse so they could ride their horse. Focus on the employee's physical health and you will prosper.
All right, we've got several more. I love this next question.
Hey, Sarah and T, This is Brooke from Venturi. Absolutely love the show. Thanks for everything you all do. Longtime listener, first time caller. So my question is, I think most people know that adding new inventory is probably one of the greatest levers you can pull that impacts your not only your top line revenues, but also your bottom line profits. With that said, how do you actually set aside a budget for new owner acquisition? Do you do it as a percentage of sales? Do you do a flat monthly amount, or you just wing it? That's it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brooke. Brooke Fouts with a PF to start his name. Don't forget the P. Well, first of all, I would ask everybody if they even have a budget for owner acquisition. And if you don't, start there. Putting a dollar into owner acquisition usually gives back 10 times that. Who would not make that investment? Ask any investor, $1 for 10? Yeah. Because what's reasonable to spend for one customer that's worth, let's say, $1 million over 10 years? I think if you ask someone on the street, they'd answer a lot higher than you're spending. And then the final answer I have on this is that this metric, this conversation, this number that you have to figure out, how much are you going to spend on new owner acquisition and how much do you want to add for the year, is a wonderful exercise. What it's actually making you do, like all budget items, is discuss this in depth. How much do we want to add? Do we want to add 10 properties? Do we want to add 20 properties? Do we want to add $1 million in revenue, or do we only need to really add $500,000? And to add that, what are we going to have to do? What are our tactics? And one thing is to have a budget so that you go and spend it in a reasonable, smart way to get that new business. Tim, thoughts?
I think you nailed it. You know, I run my company as an open book management company. We have 7 ways we make money. We have 8 ways we spend money. The 8th way to spend money is prospect marketing. It's a budget line item. And to emphasize the point, at our company meetings each month, our business development team actually puts up, we brought in this property and we expected to make this much money. We brought in this property and we expected to make this much money. And by the way, for the year, we brought in these many properties, and this is the bottom line total of what we're going to make. And so the whole staff goes, that's great. Yeah, budget is number one. I'm not sure I have a metric about what that percentage of the overall budget is. That's a great question, Brooke. I'm sorry I don't have an answer for that. But I think it's what you said, Sarah. It's dependent on what your goals are. If you're in a real growth mode, it better be a high percentage because you need to bring in those properties. If you're more in a stay-put kind of a mindset, maybe not as much. But whatever you have, spend it.
Just sitting here thinking, how much did we used to spend? When we are in high growth mode, which was around 2014 to 2017, I think including staff, we spent about $150,000 to $200,000 a year on this.
That sounds right to me. Okay, on to the next question.
This is Bob Oakes with Minestay. Question about after hours calls. I've carried a pager. We've had a bat phone that we passed around. Natalia Holzhauser with Coastal Carolina talked about it as a safety net. How do y'all handle after-hours calls, and is there a review process in place to identify process failure as opposed to human error and correct it? And you mentioned briefly AI in that regard, and curious if anybody is actually using that. Thanks, y'all.
Bob Oakes, my friend. Sarah, little-known fact. Bob is a graduate of the University of Virginia. I'm a graduate of the University of North Carolina. We used to live in the same complex, and whoever won the Virginia versus North Carolina football game washed the other person's car. So, Bob, you're also not convincing me. You don't even know where the after-hours phone is. So you stop that facade. But yeah, we've talked about this before. The bat phone, the whole process, you do need to have this thought out, and you need to have qualified people. You know, for us, texting has become more of an issue than the phone. We get very few calls now after hours. But we do have somebody monitoring the text line. And like, for instance, last night, we had 3 air quote calls. They were all texts. So make sure you have a process. Make sure you have somebody capable and review that process. Some sort of review, whether it's weekly or daily, to make sure fails don't happen, especially if you're the one with the bat phone. You want to make sure there's no problems going to happen tonight, right, folks? So your thoughts, Sarah?
Well, I just love that Bob mentioned, quote, pager. I was just trying to explain to my kids what a pager was this past week. And they were like, I don't get it. Why would you page someone? Why wouldn't you put words on the pager with the information? And I was like, because it wasn't possible. And they were like, why wasn't it possible if they could page you? They literally could not grasp the concept of a pager. So thank God we don't have those anymore. Tim, I assume when you talk about that you're monitoring texting, you're using a third party to do that, or your staff up at 3 a.m. waiting for a text to come in?
Staff monitors the text line.
At 3 in the morning?
You won't get a text 3 o'clock in the morning, but
okay,
they manage it till late in the evening.
Well, that's just interesting to me because I bet, you know, I think you're right that the majority of vacation rental managers out there right now are texting more than phone calls. And so of course, late night calls, late night issues would come in via text versus an emergency. So I'm sitting here thinking on the fly, I've wondered about the after hours emergency services. Those companies that are handling these calls and emails and texts, I guess, overnight, so you don't have to ask your staff to do that. And one solution could be that you use those third parties to monitor texts, because a lot of those would just be non-urgent. And then only the phone calls would go to staff, or maybe after hours handles emails, texts, and phone, and then after hours knows who they call when there's something they can't solve. That would have made our life a lot easier and a lot more customer. Back to Amber's question about employee satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Those 2 a.m. phone calls were debilitating to staff. And often they were not emergencies. And if you ask one thing I wish I would have done differently, it would have probably been to outsource that. At least the first line of defense, because it just caused so much exhaustion and frustration when those calls would come in.
The reach of this podcast knows no ends. We call it the Vacation Rental Managers Podcast, right? But it's also up and coming vacation rental managers, as we have students that also listen to us, as is evidenced by our next caller.
Hello, hello. My name is Angus Sewell. I am a current University of Texas senior, and I work for a company called Profitable. First off, I really enjoyed your recent episode on AI and vacation rentals with Megan Moylan. With everything y'all discussed, from homeowner acquisition to customer data analysis to reputation management, it got me thinking. If you had to create a vacation rental management company from scratch today and automate as much of it as possible using AI, you know, essentially creating a quote-unquote AI-powered vacation rental management company, how would you approach it? What would your tech stack look like in terms of the software and tools you'd use? How would you structure the business and set up all the systems and processes? I'm also curious to hear your thoughts on which roles within this hypothetical business are currently impossible to fully automate with the AI technology available today. And looking ahead, as AI continues to rapidly advance, what's your vision for what the future of property management might look like? I know I threw multiple complex questions without easy answers at y'all, but I'd love to hear both of y'all discuss them. Thank you for considering this topic.
Thank you, Angus. Thanks for listening. My answer is, from that episode, I got that you should be paying for ChatGPT, the $20 a month ChatGPT. That's the biggest thing I'd do. I don't think that any role can be removed. I think that right now AI just makes you more efficient and you can do more. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty well as far as what you can do. You can do prospecting for new owners. You can do prospecting and maintenance of guests. You can automate tasks. What you can't do is customer service. That's back to your last part of your question. You can't automate the interaction with a human. I actually had a very poor experience yesterday with a very large vacation rental entity who will go unnamed. I got someone on the phone after I had to go through 14 prompts, and they barely spoke English and they couldn't understand what I was trying to get to. Very frustrating. We got to put the people back in this business. And I think that also answers maybe your last question about what the future is like. Let's go back to the basics. It's people to people. This is a relationship business, folks. Relationship with your property owners, relationship with the guests, relationship with your employees. That's the future of the business.
Boom.
Okay, Sarah, next question's for you.
Hey, Sarah and Tim. This is Jason Thomas from Raincatcher. Thank you for taking my question. This question is geared more towards Sarah. Sarah, as you think back on the journey of selling your business, what's one thing that you wish you had known going into that process, or one thing that you had done prior to selling your business? Look forward to hearing your response. Love your show. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Jason. As many of you know, Jason represented us in the sale of our business through his company, Raincatcher. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. We did an episode called Sarah Sold a couple months after we sold. So it was about 2 years ago. Encourage anyone that's thinking about selling to go listen to that. I talked about all the things I thought I did to prepare the business and what I was happy about and how it went and all my advice. But if there was one thing I wish I would have known before I sold, it would be how totally incredible it is to sell. And I don't say that for all of you to get discouraged and think, oh my gosh, she's so happy, I should sell. It's more that I want to encourage you that someday you probably will sell your business. And keep working towards that so that you can sell it for as much money as possible to the buyer that makes you feel great about selling. But once you get to that right point, and once it's time for you to do it, if you do it, if you have a good experience, you will think, why in the heck was I hanging on? Why did I wait? Because I probably waited a year to really pull the trigger. And I just can't tell you how happy I am.
I can't. She's happy, folks. Lots of smiles whenever I see Sarah. Okay, maybe the most difficult question coming up next here, Sarah.
Hello, this is Lorraine Woodward from Becoming Rentable. With the number of people with disabilities reaching 26% of the U.S. population and our seniors projected to grow by 72 million, why hasn't the short-term rental industry embraced accessibility as a major business opportunity?
Okay. This is tough for me. Lorraine, you know I love you, even though you're a Duke fan. I am just scared to death of what happens when something is not as expected for those who are less than fully able to move around the property. Like, for instance, we had a scenario last week where a property advertises an elevator. The elevator is broken. That's not just an inconvenience. That is devastating. Grandma can't get upstairs to the third level. I'm just scared. At least I'm admitting it. How about you, Sarah?
Yeah. And I think what you're saying you're scared of is advertising that something is accessible or follows some national, international standard. That's what we're afraid of.
Yep.
For sure, if someone's building, I'm going to tell them, make sure it's accessible. It has wide doors. It has easy entry showers, things like that. And we can advertise the shower as such. So yeah, it's sad, but this feels really complicated to us, Lorraine. So maybe that's your direction to figure out how to simplify that for all of us. We are in such a litigious society that we're afraid to say anything is officially blank or officially blank because the guest seems to grab onto that and then go after us.
Yep. We have one more question.
Hey guys, this is Leigh from Winter Park Lodging Company. And our question is about cancellation policy and how do we keep owners happy and keep them on our program, but also have a flexible cancellation policy that makes guests want to book. Thanks.
Well, Leigh, since I used to work with you, I will tell you I've done a complete 360 on this. You need data. Data, data. And I think there is data enough out there that you could put it together for a homeowner to show them that they will make more money over time by having flex cancellation. And the reason I say I did a 360 is I used to say, no, we will always have a strict cancellation policy, even during COVID. No, 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 we can't ever give on that. That's our bread and butter. That's guaranteed revenue that we won't refund. But when we loosened it, I think Leigh will agree, the bookings flowed in faster and we didn't get any more cancellations than we did in the past. So we proved it. And I think you just have to show that to homeowners with data. How about you, Tim?
Okay, first of all, let me clarify. You said you've done a 360 on this. Do you mean you did a 180?
Oh, yeah. 180.
I can't let that pass.
I did a twirl. I twirled around.
Came right back.
And I'm somewhere different.
So I get it. And we just had Tim Rosolio on from Vrbo. He will tell you that it is a needle mover for bookings and traction on listings if you have a more flexible cancellation policy. But God, we can't help ourselves from our own policies. Here in North Carolina, I know you're going to just tune me out here. Oh God, those people in North Carolina. We actually advance the money to our owners. It is a death knell getting that money back from an owner on a flexible cancellation policy. So we've got to come up with some idea, some way that we can basically ensure that that money is going to be there for the owner. So still working on it, but I don't disagree with what you're saying.
You know, Tim, if the point of this podcast for 7+ years was just to make anyone out there not want to open a vacation rental business in North Carolina, you have achieved your goal.
Yes. Yes. Oh, boy. Okay. That's it. That's all the questions that anybody had for us, Sarah.
No, it's not.
What? There's more?
But we don't have time. And we had two more incredible questions that were very similar on the same topic. So Tim and I have decided the next episode is going to address just these two questions. Here's a preview.
Hey, this is Margo Shmorak, CEO and co-founder of Hostfully, and I'm super curious what you think about conferences in our industry. Do you think that they're going to continue the same way that they have, or do you think there will be new conferences?
Hey, this is Justin Ford with Breezeway.
And this is Steve Trover with Better Talent. What can we do to get more people at these types of events?
Yeah, that's the question I think we have for you, Sarah and T. What can we do to get more people engaged in the industry? Look forward to your answer.
I do too. Thanks, guys.
Okay, that is a great springboard to our next podcast. I think the doctor is in on this. We've got some ideas. What's the thing in the Peanuts cartoon when Lucy would stand behind the place and advise 5 cents? Our next episode, advice 5 cents, how to cure the engagement at conferences. Right here.
It's pretty timely since some big announcements have just come out. So stay tuned. In 2 weeks, you'll hear from us on that. But as for today, I just want to thank everyone that contributed to take the time, record their question. And such good questions, Tim. I can't imagine that any listener didn't get 1, 2, 3 takeaways that apply to their business in this episode. So thank you so much to everybody.
Amen. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye, Tim. I'm back to my Taylor Swift listening.
What up, Dodds? It's the Snoop D-O-double-G, and I just peeped the Vacation Rental Managers podcast with Sarah and T, hosted by Timmy C of Outer Banks and Sandwich Bloom, and Sarah B. She owned rental companies in Colorado, and now give the 411 to other vacation rental companies to thrive and grow. Today's episode was brought to you by Intercoastal Mint Designs. ICND is an award-winning web development and digital marketing agency that specializes in helping vacation rental companies get more direct bookings. ICND.net is their website. Special thanks to ICND for hosting Sarah and T's website. Reach to the hosts on Facebook, LinkedIn, or on their website, sarahandt.com. Snoop says lay down a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. Even better, if you're down with this episode, share it with a friend. Sarah and T will be back soon with a new episode of the VRMP. And that's what's up.